On air, online, on digital, and the ABC Listen app. You're with Leon Compton on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
A lot of people seem shocked in July this year when the state government announced that the plans to build the replacement Spirit of Tasmania ships would be scrapped. We currently have two Spirits. Here's a fair description of what they are, what they do. They are large, they are fast, and they are incredibly reliable. And interestingly, in peak times, they are already at capacity in Tasmania for freight and for passengers. They're both due to be retired in 2028. And the 11th hour decision made back in July was sold to the broader publicly as a local jobs-based campaign. But the TT Line board had already looked at those local options and rejected them more than once. So economist Saul Eslake was commissioned by the Labor Party to have a look at the possible implications of the decision to scrap the TT Line with the Spirit replacement plan and come up with a new review that would look local first. And here's the line that jumps out at you. Quote, "This decision could turn out to be the most financially ill-advised decision taken by any Tasmanian government since January 1983, when then Premier Robin Gray rejected Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser's offer of $500 million not to proceed with the Gordon Below Franklin Dam. The worst financial decision in decades. And the finance is just a part of it," in his report. Saul Eslake, independent economist, good morning to you.
Good morning, Leo.
Saul Eslake, how close was the TT Line board to signing off on a go decision for the construction of the replacement Spirits back in July when the government pulled the pin?
I think the only people who can give you the absolute answer to that is the board of TT Line or the minister. My understanding is that it was a matter of days away, that they had entered into a memorandum of understanding with the company in Finland. That is, if you like, an agreement to come to a contract. But they hadn't signed a contract. They were within days of signing a contract when the government announced its decision that they couldn't go ahead with that, and instead that this task force would be established to explore opportunities to have the ships, in inverted commas, made in Australia.
The TT Line board, who up until the middle of this year were responsible for all the decisions around a new Spirit of Tasmania vessel, had already looked at these options and looked at them extensively. How extensively?
Well, again, I don't know that. That's something that only the board or the executives of TT Line could tell you. But what I do know from the public record is that not only had TT Line board come to that conclusion, but so had the state government. You know, before the 2018 election, they put out a pamphlet trumpeting the fact that the replacement Spirits would be delivered 2 years ahead of schedule, asserting that the fact that they could do that was evidence of their superior financial management, and noting as well that there was no capacity to build these ships in Australia, not only not in Tasmania, but in Australia. So clearly, up until the middle of July, the government shared the view of the board of TT Line, which it had appointed, that there wasn't any capacity to build these ships in Australia. And look, you know, it's not unreasonable, especially for government-owned bodies, departments and corporations like Hydro Tas, which I was on the board of for 10 years, it's not unreasonable for them to contemplate paying a little bit more for a major infrastructure project or equipment purchase than they could if they bought it from overseas or the mainland. It's not unreasonable for them to be willing to pay a bit more in order to create jobs locally or to create the capacity not only to build something but to repair it. And without going into any specific details, you know, I was party to decisions like that when I was on the board of the Hydro, and that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. The question in those circumstances is, how much of a premium are you paying to create those local jobs, and is there a better way of doing it? But In this case, the clear view of the board of TT Line and the government itself up to July was that there wasn't the capacity to do that. And so they had said, you know, buy the ships from Finland. But they would ensure that there would be Tasmanian product featured throughout. That is presumably, you know, Tasmanian timbers in the cabins and the dining room tables and all of that sort of thing. In other words, there were going to be local jobs created and local business opportunities created, even though the ships were going to be built in Finland. And you'd sort of have to think to yourself, if it was really such a good idea to have a task force explore the opportunities to create more work in Australia, how come it took a phone call from the Prime Minister in order to get the government to come to that conclusion?
So if this is about boosting manufacturing capacity and supporting a shipbuilder in Australia, whomever that shipbuilder might be, and it hasn't been decided, although some hands very aggressively up in the air, like sort of five-year-olds in a classroom, as possible shipyards for this at the moment. You talk in your report about how we would need to also think about what is in the national interest or Western Australia's interest might not necessarily be in Tasmania's interest.
The federal government, before the budget, announced a national manufacturing strategy to put some flesh on the idea that reviving Australian manufacturing could be one way of pulling us out of the recession that we're currently in. And that's not an unreasonable thing to say, as long as it doesn't amount to a reversion to the protectionist era that Australia lived through until 1989 at such great cost to the living standards of Australians. And they identified six areas of manufacturing in which they thought Australia could build capabilities. One of those was defence manufacturing. But none of them were building commercial vessels of the sort that TT Line is talking about here. Now, some people might think, well, you know, we can build ships for the Navy. We're spending billions of dollars building submarines and naval vessels in Adelaide at, you know, almost twice the cost that we could have purchased those things from overseas for, but we're doing it. But as people who spoke to me in the course of the research I was doing for this report make the point that building naval vessels is simpler than building commercial vessels of the sort we're talking about here, because naval vessels basically carry a small number of sailors who do what they're told and aren't allowed to complain about whether the conditions are uncomfortable, and a lot of missiles. Whereas the sort of vessels we're talking about here carry a large number of passengers who expect smooth sailing and have the capacity to complain and to vote if they don't get what they want. They carry cars and trucks, which can do a lot of damage to each other if they run into each other because the crossing is very rough and they're not securely tied down. And they carry perishable freight, which can go off at great cost to the producers of it if, for example, the ship isn't allowed to sail because the conditions are too rough. Whereas, you know, naval vessels don't go about doing what naval vessels are designed to do if the weather's a bit inclement. You know, the sailors put up with it. That's their duty they're doing to defend their country. So it's a very different capability from building these type of vessels, from doing what's being done at great expense in shipyards in Adelaide. And you know, no one has built a ship of this nature in Australia since 1990. The last one that was built in Australia, the last steel-hulled vessel, was actually one of the two ships that Chas Kelly's company, Sea Road, runs across Bass Strait. And we simply don't have the capacity in either Tasmania or Australia to. We can build catamarans, and they're very good.
In fact, we do a very good job of building catamarans. 100 metres long, made out of aluminium.
And I myself have travelled in other parts of the world, in Canada, on catamarans built by Bob Clifford's company. And you know, you get a sense of pride being on the other side of the world and seeing on the boat you're travelling on, this was made in Tasmania. You know, my kind of heart glowed when I saw that when I was travelling to Newfoundland once about 20 years ago. But the point to mention, again, this was reinforced to me by people who I spoke to who know about these things, that Bass Strait is one of the roughest stretches of water in the world because it's shallow and it has thousands of kilometres of ocean on either side of it with winds that blow through it. The crossing is also longer than other crossings across pretty rough water, such as between the South and North Island of New Zealand or between the northwest coast of Wales and the east coast of Ireland, to Dublin. And so the thought that you could use a catamaran even acknowledging that the kind of catamarans that INCAT is capable of building today are worlds away from the Vomit Comet that some of us, me included, travelled on in the early 1990s. They simply do not have the capacity to provide the reliability that steel-hulled ships would be able to provide. And, you know, in my report, I go back over 120 years of the history of inquiries into Bass Strait shipping. You know, I didn't know this. The very first Senate Select Committee established by the Australian Parliament in 1901 was an inquiry into Bass Strait shipping services. And from 1901 until a couple of Productivity Commission inquiries in the past 15 years, a recurring theme has been the importance to Tasmania and to Tasmanian businesses, not only of the price of shipping services by comparison with what people have to pay on the mainland to send stuff by road or rail, but also the reliability of
and
those
so
services.
This is one of the points that I made in my introduction. The Spirits, as they operate at the moment, are incredibly reliable. I could think about the number of days where they've had to cancel sailings over the past few years or because of weather that they couldn't operate in or because of issues with the capacity of the vessels. There have been very few days in which those vessels haven't operated. Can we drill down to the headline that's come out of your report? Solis Lake's our guest. He's written a report about the government's decision to scrap plans to build the Spirits, in the replacement Spirits in Europe, and to look locally again. Quote, "This decision could turn out to be the most financially ill-advised decision taken by any government in decades." Explain the financial risk that you see.
Well, there are three. And in saying this, I'm basing my judgment on advice which I've put in the report from Stephen Gumley, a Tasmanian who was for 7 years head of the Defence Materiel Organisation, which, while it was in existence, ran huge contracts to buy ships and planes and tanks and uniforms for the army. And based on what he told me and has said publicly about the risks involved in big procurement contracts like this, there are three risks that Tasmania faces. One is that the ships will cost more, not only than the $850 million that was going to cost if they were built in Finland, but probably more than the initial quote that an Australian company would give. Number two, that the ships will take longer to deliver than they would have done if TT Line had been able to proceed with its original intentions that the state government had previously supported, and will probably end up taking longer to deliver than an Australian company originally promises. And to give you an estimate of the significance of that, the two TT Line replacement ships that they were going to buy would have had the capacity to carry 600 more tourists each sailing. There are 306 sailings over the peak summer season between late November and the end of April. That's 184,000 tourists who would not be able to come to Tasmania on the ships during the peak season for each year that the ferry is delayed.
But then there's also the freight capacity at peak time. So Tasmania's growing agriculture sector. These are the faster ferries. Chas Kelly and others operate ferries of their own, but these are the fastest ones.
Yeah.
What are the impacts for?
Well,
the
I deliberately,
of the
yeah, okay. So just to finish what I was saying about tourists, the fact that you don't have 184,000 tourists coming here who could have come for every year that the delivery of the replacements is delayed, that's a cost of $350 million, based on the estimates from Tourism Tasmania of the average amount that each tourist spends. There probably is some additional loss of freight capacity, but I deliberately didn't include that in the estimates. I could have made the number bigger than $350 million, but my judgment was that at least in the early stages, say for the first year or two that the replacement ships would have been on board, any additional freight capacity might have been at the expense of the other two shipping companies. That is, the TT Line would have gained market share, which would have been good for TT Line, but not necessarily a cost to the Tasmanian economy as a whole. So I thought, you know, attempting to inflate the number by doing that, I thought that would have been the wrong thing to do professionally. So just to reiterate, so there's the issue of cost, there's the issue of delay in the ships being delivered, and finally, and most importantly, the risks associated with the unreliability of the service. And we've seen this as a different example with the John Deegan, the ship that had been bought by Tasports to operate to King Island. That has proved to be unreliable. And as a result, Tasports has had to incur extra expense to charter ships to provide the service when the John Deegan has been laid up in dry dock, and the people and producers of King Island have suffered extra cost and inconvenience as well. And I use as a real-world example to say this is not just something that some academic economist has dreamt up while sitting at his desk. But on the other side of the world in Scotland, there is a state-owned shipping company called Calmac, used to be called Caledonian McBain, that operates all the ferry services between mainland Scotland and Shetland and Orkney and the Hebrides and Arran. And in 2015, that company wanted to replace two of its ferries, the ones that serve Arran and the one that serve the Outer Hebrides.
And the government actually stepped in a similar way to
indeed,
the way there's
the
been
government, the Scottish government directed the company to accept what has been reported in the Scottish Parliament as the highest of six alternative bids, on the grounds that that was a bid from the last shipbuilder in Glasgow, who, as it happened, had just been bought by a billionaire businessman who'd been one of the few people who supported the Scottish government in the Scottish referendum campaign of that year. That contract for two replacement ferries was for an amount of £97 million. The ships were to be delivered in 2018. It's now late 2020. The price of those ships has gone up to over £200 million, and the ships won't be delivered until 2023. Now, you know, this is a very similar situation to what we face here, with a risk that Tasmanians end up paying more for ships that arrive later and are less reliable than would have been the case if the board of the TT line, which knows what it's doing, had been allowed to act on the conclusions it drew from a lot of very diligent and thorough research.
On Mornings Around Tasmania, let's be fair, Austal are one of the companies that you would expect would want to be a successful contractor for the Australian ownership of the process of replacing these ferries, whether or not much of it happens in Australia or what percentage of that happens using Australian labour. And they've said in a strongly worded statement in response to your report, it's regrettable observers of the process don't have faith in our shipbuilding that many others in the world do. And they talk about Australia's capacity to build these ships and in rejecting your concerns about us doing it here.
Well, what I'd note is that until July this year, the Tasmanian government didn't have faith in the capacity of Australian shipbuilders to build replacements for the Spirits of Tasmania, because they said quite bluntly and without qualification that Australia did not have the capacity to build these ships. But let's unpick the word Australia in this context. And there's a reason why throughout my report, when I say to have the ships built in Australia, I put in Australia in inverted commas. Because all the evidence and advice that I was able to gain from a large number of people I spoke to and things which I read says that if that company were to get the contract, the hulls for the ships would actually be built at their operation in Cebu in the Philippines. Not in Henderson in Western Australia, just south of Perth, where their headquarters are. Not in Tasmania, but in the Philippines.
But they've said that openly to us.
Yeah,
we've
right.
had the chief of Austal on the radio.
Okay.
He said it'll happen in the Philippines. We'll try and do then the fit-out, bring those hulls back to Australia,
right.
try and do the fit-out
okay.
here.
So let's also note that the engines, the propellers, the drive shafts, the fancy gear that allows cars and trucks to drive on and off these ships, which is a key part of the service they offer, that would all be constructed and brought from Europe, because companies there are the only ones that have the capacity to make this. So, you know, the bulk of the value of the ship, the cost of the, is in building the hulls and all the electrical and electronic gear that goes in it. So, you know, when we're talking about $850 million or possibly $1 billion, most of that value is going to be outside Australia. You know, what we're talking about is the cream on the cake, as it were, of the fit-outs of the cabins and the crew quarters and the public areas that people will see when they travel on the ships. Now, remember also that the Tasmanian government had said when it was going to procure the ships from Europe that they would feature Tasmanian product throughout. So the question is not how many jobs will be created in Tasmania if this Western Australian company or some other Australian company gets the contract. It's how many more jobs would have been created in Tasmania than would have been the case if the original plan had gone ahead with. And if any jobs are created in Western Australia for this, surely if it costs more and results in the ships arriving later and being less reliable, Tasmanians are entitled to ask, why are we doing this to create jobs in Western Australia? You know, as I like to say, to kind of paraphrase John Cleese's character in the film The Life of Brian, what have the Western Australians ever done for us? Apart from whinge and moan about GST revenue sharing arrangements and call us mendicants, as the former Premier of Western Australia used to do. You know, they haven't even built us any roads or aqueducts like, you know, like the Romans did for the people of Judea.
I'm mindful of the fact that you have to go. We would like to talk to Michael Ferguson about some of the criticisms and the concerns raised in your report in the days ahead. It's budgets estimates week this week, so that will be difficult. But certainly in the days ahead, we would like to talk to Michael Ferguson in a long-form interview about how they came to this decision and how they will ensure to protect Tasmanians against the risk of the three points of that triangle that you named. Cost, time, reliability, and see what he has to say. Thank you for being part of Mornings this morning.
Thank you very much for having me.
Saul Eslake, Mornings, ABC Local Radio.